Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
What happened on May Day yesterday in 160 countries? Hollywood writers go on strike. Almost 12,000 walk out. Today on the show, it's the Ohio AFL-CIO and the woman who sparked the 9-to-5 office workers movement. Welcome to the Tuesday, May 2nd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least 6 platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off, this being the first Tuesday of the new month. Hard to believe it's May already. Timothy Berga will be our first guest. He serves as president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. OhioAFLCIO.org is the website. And the big issue right now is House Joint Resolution 1. We've been talking about this on the show for the past couple of months. The legislature, the supermajority GOP legislature, tried to get this through in the lame duck session in December. Didn't happen. Essentially, it will end simple majority rule in Ohio as we have known it in our Constitution for over 100 years. Under HJR1, ballot initiatives would require a 60% vote to pass, and it just makes it more difficult to get an issue on the ballot by making changes to signature requirements. The other issue here is, in fact, how they're really moving forward with this. They want to get this on the August election. Last year, they said no more August elections. They said they were too costly. Hardly anybody shows up. Well, they're right. So they decided to, well, it's not official yet. And that's why we have Tim coming on the show today. But they're trying to get this on the August ballot, and it'll cost taxpayers about $20 million. I want to reference a piece, an op-ed piece, that was posted on Cleveland.com about 2 weeks ago. And it was written by Michael Curtin, who is a former state lawmaker. And he also was the editor of the Columbus Dispatch and an associate publisher for some time. He writes, throughout 220 years of statehood, the Ohio General Assembly has never scheduled an August special election to rush to the statewide ballot, a seismic, history-changing amendment to the Ohio Constitution. Not during the Great Depression, not during war, not ever. Throughout our state's history, across 134 previous General Assemblies, until 1852, they convened on an annual basis. Legislative leaders have acted in good faith. They've shown respect for their constituents and the Constitution itself by seeking constitutional change in regular elections, usually in November, when voter turnout is highest, to ensure broad consensus on fundamental issues. He goes on to say that what is taking place in the state of Ohio is arrogant. It is a brazen and nakedly transparent exercise of raw political power, contemptuous of the citizens that our lawmakers are sworn to represent. Pretty powerful words, but are they going to make a difference? We'll find out. This is all going to come to a culmination, I believe, next Wednesday. May 10th is the date that they're circulating. Tim's going to give us some more details on that when we bring him on the show. Our second guest today is Ellen Cassidy. We had her on months ago when she came out with her book, Working 9-to-5. Does that sound familiar? Do you remember the movie, 9-to-5? Came out in the late 70s, and it starred Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton. Great movie. It was a big hit. This is all about what happened In Boston, Massachusetts, back in 1973, the movement I'm talking about, the women of 9 to 5 built a nationwide feminist movement that united people of diverse races, classes, and ages. They took on the corporate titans. They leafleted, filed lawsuits, started a women-led union. They won millions of dollars in back pay, helped make sexual harassment and pregnancy discrimination illegal. And Ellen points out, when women rose up to win rights and respect at the office, they transformed workplaces throughout America. And the movie pretty much highlighted that. Well, May is Labor History Month. Maybe you didn't know that. And this is the time, says Ellen, to honor the chain of working women's activism that stretches from the bread and roses garment women of the 1910s to the brave women who supported the sit-down strikes in the 1930s and the 1940s to the civil rights marchers and women's liberation advocates of the 1950s and the 1960s. And the 9-to-5 movement forged our own link to that chain. Just Google the book 9-to-5, and it's still available on Amazon. One of the things we're going to get into is one powerful woman in our labor history, and that would be Frances Perkins. And I've talked about her on the show many, many times. On March 25th, 1911, Frances Perkins was visiting with a friend who lived near Washington Square in New York City when they heard fire engines and screams. They rushed out to the street. They wanted to know what was going on. There was some trouble. What's happening here? Well, a fire had broken out in a garment factory on the upper floors of a building on Washington Square, and the blaze ripped through the lint in the air. The only way out was down the elevator, which had been abandoned at the base of the shaft, or through an exit to the roof. The factory owner had locked the roof exit that day. Why? He later testified he was worried some of his workers might steal some of the blouses they were making. Perkins later recalled, "The people had just begun to jump when we got there. They'd been holding on until that time, standing in the windowsills, being crowded by others behind them. The fire pressing closer and closer, the smoke closer and closer. Finally, the men were trying to get out this thing that the firemen carry with them, a net, to catch people if they do jump. They were trying to get that out. They couldn't wait any longer. They began to jump. The weight of the bodies was so great. At the speed at which they were traveling, they broke through the net and then they died." I'm talking about the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. When it was all done, 147 young women were dead, either from their fall from the factory windows or from smoke inhalation. That day changed Frances Perkins for life, and we're going to talk about that on the show. She eventually found her way to FDR's cabinet as labor secretary. She was the first female labor secretary, and she made it her job to change the rules for building owners, for those who worked in factories, to make them safer. And we'll talk about that on the show. She was quite a woman, and we are going to commemorate what she has done and many people like her today when we check in with Ellen Cassidy, author of the book 9 to 5. And now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Thousands of film and TV writers are on strike today, throwing Hollywood into turmoil. The Writers Guild of America called its first work stoppage in 15 years after failing to reach an agreement for higher pay from studios like Walt Disney, Netflix. By the way, the last strike, which was 15 years ago, lasted 100 days and cost the California economy about $2 billion. We're talking about 11,500 screenwriters. They voted recently to authorize the strike. The strike became effective at 12:01 a.m. today. Now, the writers and studios have been preparing for a strike for a number of weeks. Many writers have been rushing to meet deadlines that their studios moved up in advance of the strike, some facing the prospect of what could be months without pay have been trying to find new projects, which usually include upfront payments. TV studios, in the meantime, have been pushing to have scripts finalized so that production can continue while the writers strike. They have pushed production to the fall on some series whose scripts are not yet ready. Also, late-night comedy shows are likely to go off the air. In the meantime, streaming and movie studios may be less impacted, at least for the short term. Many streaming services have been facing pressure to cut costs, and some industry insiders thought they could view a strike as a benefit. How about that? Well, negotiations for a new contract have been going on since mid-March. The union has two demands related to the use of automation. First, it wants to ensure that no literary material can be written or rewritten by an automated program. The union's members are concerned most prominently about the possibility of a producer or director modifying a script using artificial intelligence, which is a huge issue all over the workforce today. We're going to do a show on that down the road. In the meantime, they want to prevent studios from using automated programs to generate ideas or other source material that would then be adapted by screenwriters. Other industry workers have flagged their own concerns about the use of automation in film and television. Netflix, for example, has provisions in its contracts with voice actors, giving it the right to use a simulation of an actor's voice by all technologies and processes now known or hereafter developed throughout the universe and in perpetuity. That was written by a lawyer, right? Netflix claims the provision's purpose is to allow it to modify one actor's recorded audio to make it sound like another's, especially when a new actor fills in an existing role. Now, the actors are now concerned that such language would give Netflix the right to automatically generate entire movies using simulations of an actor's voice without even having to hire a new actor at all. Wow. and that's just one of the issues. In the meantime, we got notification that IATSE members, that's the International Association of Theatrical and Stage Employees, they are probably going to honor the Writers Guild picket lines, and they have the right to do so. So this strike could take on monumental proportions. We'll see what happens here. Over 160 countries observed May Day yesterday, a celebration of labor rights. Workers and activists in countries across Europe, South America, and Asia took to the streets to demand better working conditions. Unions in France, oh boy, did they get militant. They marched to protest the recent efforts to increase the retirement age from 62 to 64. South Korea's May Day rallies returned to their pre-pandemic size, with workers demanding an increased minimum wage and reduced working hours. Spain saw over 70 marches with demands from both blue-collar and white-collar workers, including moving to a four-day work week and eliminating the requirement for lawyers to be on call 365 days a year. Protesters in Turkey were detained and prevented from entering Istanbul's main square while journalists attempting to film the detainees were themselves detained. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Tim Berge on behalf of the Ohio AFL-CIO coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-Union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. 216-666-2185. You can find them online at ulagency.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this portion of America's Workforce, sponsored by iMed. Switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So go to imed.com/union and you'll learn a whole lot more. Let's go to Columbus, Ohio right now and join Tim Berg, a longtime supporter of America's Workforce and president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Very, very busy trying to make sure we get people educated on an issue that may come before voters in August, and it's House Joint Resolution 1, which, as I indicated at the beginning of the show, will end simple majority rule in the state of Ohio. I've always said on this show, elections matter. We have a super GOP majority in the state of Ohio. We're not alone. There's 29 states with super majorities, and what we're essentially seeing in a good chunk of America is authoritarian rule. Tim Berger, thanks for joining us here on America's Workforce. Where are we with HJR1 now? Give me all the details. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Flash. And just a friendly reminder, today is primary election day, so I encourage everybody to get out there and vote if you haven't already. Yes, HJR1, SJR2, as you pointed out, would change 111 years of Ohio constitutional law where citizens had the right. Not an easy thing to do, but they have a right to go seek redress by constitutional amendment. And should it get to the ballot, which is very difficult to get to the ballot, simple majority would then pass a constitutional amendment. They want to change 111 years of that law that was brought in during a constitutional convention back in 1912 and say you now need 60% of the vote to pass a constitutional amendment. So it's simply another political power grab. Outside special interests are funding this thing. So we're part of a broad coalition that's saying protect our Constitution from this unnecessary, undemocratic, unconstitutional power grab and have your legislators stop it. And we need to get that message through today. They've got till May 10th in order to do this, which would then, in their mind, trigger an August 8th special election. And if you remember, Flash, back in December, the legislature said, okay, no more August special elections. All the Board of Election officials are tired and burnt out, and it costs way too much money to do these special elections. We're only 8% of the electorate turnout. So not only do they want to upend simple majority law in the state of Ohio, but they want to do it in a primary election season or a special election season when typically 8 to 10% of the voters even turn out. So it's wrong. Really encouraging your listeners today to call their state legislators and tell them to stop HJR1, SJR2.
And that special election would cost voters, what is it, like $20 million? And they said because it costs that much money, we shouldn't do August elections, right?
Yeah, that was a big part of the discussion. They've appropriated, they're trying to appropriate $20 million to hold this special election. You know, we think they should not be even messing with this. It's not needed. But if they're going to try to have the voters amend our constitutional law, you simply can't in an August election where nobody turns out. So it stinks to high heaven. The newspapers are all editorializing against it. 240 Ohio organizations have banded together. We're one of them to say stop HGR1, SJR2. This week and next week will tell the tale in terms of whether Ohioans' voices will remain intact.
You mentioned the May 10th deadline, so that's a week from tomorrow. How many votes do they need to move this forward in the legislature then?
The legislature needs 3/5 votes in the House and the Senate. So the Senate's a foregone conclusion that they're going to pass this thing. The House, they need 60 votes. So we're really encouraging your listeners to contact their state House representative on to stop HJR1.
Now, do you have all their names on the website, the Ohio AFL-CIO, ohioaflcio.org? Because those listening right now, I mean, this is a call to action. What's the best plan of attack here, Tim?
Yeah, if you go to our website, you'll be able to. There's a state house switchboard, and then just let them know where you live, and they'll contact you to your state house member.
Okay, and you mentioned, is it 240 organizations now? I remember last time they tried to do this, it was about 140 or 150. So it seems to be really growing right now, huh?
It's definitely growing, and there's no constituency. I mean, you may have seen or watched the hearings. I testified against this. The testimony is overwhelmingly in opposition to this. Very few people or institutions or organizations are coming forward to say, yeah, this is a good idea. And just recently, the Ohio Board of Elections Association have said to the legislature, you just prohibited these last December. Now you're going to change your mind and say, we need to do this. Why? Mm-hmm. So a lot of individual Board of Elections leaders are speaking up, including Cuyahoga County and those in Northeast Ohio, saying this is unnecessary. Too few of the electorate even turn out for these things. It's too costly. And we've got to get ready for, today's primary election and then general election in November. We're better than this in Ohio was a big part of my testimony, and we need to stop this. Not to mention, Flash, when state bond issues are presented to Ohioans, it has to go through a constitutional amendment process as it's borrowing money to, for this economic development and construction measures. A lot of these issues, these bond issues that create good-paying construction jobs and help economic development in Ohio, when they've been on the ballot, they haven't received 60% of the vote. It's very hard to get a yes vote on a constitutional amendment. So we're really putting in jeopardy even the economic development of things and the job creations in this state. So for so many reasons, this is wrong, and we need to make sure we're taking a stand here.
Tim, I was reading earlier. You probably know Michael Curtin. Michael?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a former Columbus Dispatch editor. He also served in the legislature, two-term state lawmaker, and he put an op-ed together that was really, really powerful. And I read part of it. I'm going to read a little bit more here. He writes, when Ohioans voted back in 1912 to give themselves the initiative power, it was to clean up an arrogant and crooked statehouse. It was meant to remind statehouse politicians where political power ultimately resides. Over the 111 years since, Ohio citizens have used that power responsibly, approving only 19 of 71 amendments advanced via the initiative. Many of those citizen-led amendments approved with less than 60% of the vote have been vital to Ohio's quality of life, such as the 10 mil limit on unvoted property taxes and home rule authority for cities and counties. He goes on to say, at a time when public trust in government is at an all-time low, that some statehouse politicians are willing to trash our state's 220-year-old tradition of respecting voters is a historic and contemptuous act of bad faith. Couldn't have said it better. I mean, it's amazing what's going on in the state of Ohio right now. You have a, a legislative conference on the day before the deadline? Is that right? Okay. Now, I take it that this is topic number one for that legislative conference?
Yeah, if it's still an unsettled question, absolutely. May 9th is our legislative conference for trade unionists. We'll come into Columbus, and we have a number of issues to lobby on. Obviously, this is a top of the list. And Mike Curtin is absolutely right. That Constitutional Convention in 1912, former President Theodore Roosevelt addressed the delegates of Ohio's Constitutional Convention to support what they ultimately did by allowing citizens the opportunity to amend the Constitution with a simple majority rule, 50% plus one, and that's been in law for 111 years. They want to undo that, and they want to try to slide it in an election where nobody's paying attention, and it's just wrong. And we're better than that in Ohio, and we need to make sure that our voices are being heard. Call your state legislator today. Tell them to stop HJR 1. SJR 2. They're actually having hearings on it again today, so you know there's a chance they could pass it out of committee. So we need everybody to be paying attention to this.
And one more question on this topic: where's DeWine on it right now, Governor Mike DeWine?
Well, he's not said much other than if the authorizing legislation to trigger an August 8th special election comes to his desk, he did say that he would sign it.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Another issue I wanted to pick your brain on is child labor. And we've been on this subject for the past couple of weeks. And, in fact, we had the Iowa State Labor Fed on yesterday. We talked to their political director because they have a bill. They were trying to clean it up. And it was really atrocious at first. But we're seeing a number of states. There's about 10 states. And this is a coordinated effort on behalf of a right-wing think tank called the Foundation for Government Accountability. And Ohio is on the list where they want to lower the age for child labor. In Iowa, kids 16 could serve alcohol. They could work in construction jobs, according to the legislation that's being written right now. I'm just wondering, Tim, are we going to do the same thing in the state of Ohio? Where are we with this?
Well, we're not going to let that happen, but you're right. It's a national concerted effort from these extreme right-wing groups that want to turn back the clock of time on, of all things, child labor law. And I know the bill in Iowa was originally introduced, would, you know, allow, you know, 16, 17-year-olds back into heavy industry and meat packaging and processing and all these dangerous jobs that we've outlawed. And in Ohio, what they're trying to do is for 16 and 17-year-old child workers, they want them to be able to work till 9 o'clock on school nights. And we don't think it's a good idea. We think, you know, there's a time for school, there's a time for, you know, extracurricular activity, and there's a time for work. And so it's obviously not as extreme as what Iowa and other states were proposing, but we just don't think it's a good idea to be reversing, going backwards on child labor law.
Okay. It seems like it's not as egregious as the one in the state of Iowa. I know in Arkansas, they lowered the age to 14. So it's amazing what's going on in America right now. And serving alcohol, come on. I mean, geez. All right. We got to drive you to the Ohio AFL-CIO website here because we got to stop this craziness with House Joint Resolution 1, which will end simple majority rule in the state of Ohio, ohioaflcio.org. The battle right now is going to be in the House, and the deadline is 1 week from tomorrow. They got to get this done. Well, the lawmakers are trying to get this done by next Wednesday so they can get on the August ballot, which will cost us $20 million. Unbelievable. All right. You take care, my friend. Keep up the fight, and we'll unwind it all next month. Okay, brother?
Okay. Thanks, Flash.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Ellen Cassidy, the woman that started the 9-to-5 movement for office workers in America. She's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. So please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oft.aft.org. And speaking of the teachers, I want to do a shout-out here to the Faculty Alliance of Miami. They are trying to affiliate with the American Federation of Teachers. Their election, it started on April 18th, and it wraps up today via mail ballot, and the Ohio Federation is helping them out. And Melissa Cropper, who is the president of the OFT, said, "We stand in solidarity with these hardworking faculty, and we look forward to welcoming them into the AFT." We'll see how that turns out. In the meantime, the OFT is standing in solidarity with 300 full-time substitute teachers in Columbus City Schools, and they're trying to organize to join the Columbus Education Association. A lot of organizing going on. Certainly good. A lot of organizing going on 50 years ago. Let's go to line number two. And joining us is Ellen Cassidy. We had Ellen on the show some months back when she came out with the book Working 9 to 5. It's her first person account of an exciting movement. And you may recall the movie 9 to 5. Featuring Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton. I remember when it premiered in Cleveland, Ohio, and there was an office workers group. Karen Nussbaum was her name, and she's been on the show a couple of times, who was very, very much involved in that movement. Ellen Cassidy, welcome back to America's Workforce. It's hard to believe this all started, 50 years ago. It seems like it was just yesterday, wasn't it?
Well, sort of, yeah. But it was 50 years ago, 1973. Started in Boston and spread out across the country, the 9 to 5 movement for rights and respect for women office workers.
So talk to me about what happened. I mean, you played a very integral role in starting this. Can you explain the conditions and maybe give me some details on what actually happened back then that sparked this movement?
Yeah, well, Karen Nussbaum, who you mentioned, and I were clerk typists at Harvard University in the Boston area. And 10 of us started out sitting around in a circle talking about our jobs. We talked about low pay, unequal pay, dead-end jobs, training men to be our own supervisors, and being asked to do favors, all kinds of favors, for our bosses. Those were the issues that we and everyone sitting around us in those typing pools was talking about. Before long, we were running our bad boss contest, where we called out the boss who asked his secretary to pin up a hole in his trousers while he was wearing them, and the boss who fired his secretary for bringing him a corned beef sandwich on white bread instead of rye. We took on the biggest banks and insurance companies. We won millions of dollars in back pay and raises for women and people of color. And we united women of all ages, races, and classes who were upset about the conditions for secretaries and offices. And we ended up forming a woman-led union called District 925, still active in Seattle, Washington. And we made countless bosses get their own coffee.
You definitely shook things up, no doubt about it. What kind of reaction, when you took on these so-called corporate titans, that there had to be some pushback? And keep in mind, we're going back 50 years here. That was a different America at that time. Can you lay that out for us? What happened as a result of your movement?
I think a lot of bosses felt that the wallpaper had come alive, and they were desperate to avoid unions. So we had banks, insurance companies, publishing companies throwing money at the women in their companies. When we set up a picket line outside their company, it was not long before they instituted huge raises. They set up child care centers, paid $100,000 for employee child care. They started job posting. They started career ladders. They started grievance procedures. Really what they did was they started handing out the kinds of wins that unions can achieve. We were not a union. Soon we were a union. We formed a union side by side with our 9-to-5 organization, but we really pioneered kind of freewheeling community organizing style organizing that helped to educate women working in offices, men, bosses, unions themselves. And many unions began looking at office workers with new eyes and thinking, you know, here's a huge unorganized workforce, and maybe we should get into that.
Now, the movie 9-to-5 that starred, again, Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton, obviously they were, you know, keyed into what was going on in the Boston area. Did you get involved in that? Were you consulted on that movie?
We sure were. Jane Fonda knew Karen Nussbaum from the anti-Vietnam War movement, and she came to us and said she wanted to make a movie about the concerns of office workers. We were thrilled, and she brought her team to meet with a group of women in Cleveland, and they sat around, and it was a little stiff at first, and then one of the team posed a question that we had never thought to ask in all our years of meeting women one-on-one and recruitment lunches and organizing and so on. They said, "Have you ever fantasized about doing in your boss?" And there was a moment of stunned silence, and then the room just exploded because it turned out everybody had. And all those fantasies went right into the script. And you remember the plot where three women get together, and it becomes necessary to kidnap their boss and tie him up and chain him in his McMansion. And then they go back to the office, and no one really notices he's gone. And they take over and they start instituting all these worker-friendly policies like flex time and job sharing and an on-site child care center. And come to find out, the company runs way better than it did before these policies were in place. So that movie was just electrifying for the office worker workforce. Women had never seen ourselves on the big screen as the main characters, as office workers. And so it really captured the imagination of women office workers all over the country. It was a huge box office hit. There's one scene where Jane Fonda is, maybe it's her first day of work, she's ushered into a little room with a huge photocopying machine, and she's supposed to make some copies. So she tentatively presses the button, and all these papers start flying out of different orifices of the machine, and her lips starts to tremble as she's really upset. Women would stand up in the theaters and shout at the screen, "Push the stop button!" So that movie really propelled our movement forward. We inspired the movie, and then the movie really gave us a huge boost. And Dolly Parton's toe-tapping anthem continues to this day to inspire workers, men and women. And once that movie came out, we had won the debate, and it was time to consolidate our power.
We'll continue the conversation and talk about some women that made a significant difference in labor history. Back in a few minutes on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to Boston, Massachusetts, and rejoin Ellen Cassidy. Ellen is the founder, longtime leader of 9 to 5, the National Association of Women Office Workers. Used to be called National Secretaries Week, and now it's Administrative Professionals Week, and it's all this week. And we're saluting, obviously, all the administrative professionals and how you got from point A to point B. And May is also Labor History Month. And Ellen, I know you've done a lot of work and you've done a lot of speaking about women that made a significant difference, made things better. 9 to 5 movement's a very good example there. Take me back to, over 100 years ago, the Bread and Roses Garment Women of the 1910s. Can you reference that time in America? What happened back then?
The uprising of the 10,000. So women who were working in the garment factories went out on strike by the tens of thousands in New York and in New England. And these were teenagers. They were immigrants. They didn't speak English. And they were brave enough to hit the streets in support of the 8-hour day, better wages, better working conditions. That was right around the time of the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire that killed 146 women who had to jump out the window when a fire started in an unsafe factory in New York City. And we were keenly aware as 9-to-5ers of that labor history, of those women who came before us, and they really inspired us. We studied them. We studied the sit-down strikers of the 1930s and 40s and the women who supported those strikers in the auto and steel industries and on up through the civil rights marchers and the women's liberation movement whose ideas seeped into every corner of American society. So we knew that we were part of a chain of working women's activism that continues to this day and continues to make changes in our economy.
If you don't mind, let's go and revisit what you mentioned here about the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. We've done a number of shows on this throughout the years, and the woman that stands out in that is Frances Perkins, who watched it. I mean, she was in New York City when it happened on March 25th, 1911, and that shaped what she eventually became. Can you walk us through on how she was so instrumental in providing the safeguards of what we have today? I mean, this is quite remarkable. This one woman, she made a huge difference, didn't she?
She did. She didn't do it alone. That fire really shocked people and really galvanized the garment women themselves to fight for safer conditions in the places they were working. But Frances Perkins was visiting a friend in March of 1911, and she looked out the window and she saw flames and smoke billowing. And people rushed to the site and watched as women stood on the windowsills on the high floors and jumped because the boss had locked the access to the roof exit because he was afraid that people would steal the blouses that they were making. So Frances Perkins was so affected by this that it was a turning point in her life, and she started working for fair standards in safety, in wages, in hours, in child labor, in health insurance. She went on to serve in New York State and successfully helped laws pass there, fair labor standards in New York State. And then Franklin Roosevelt, FDR, appointed her as the first woman Department of Labor secretary. And she, her purview was huge. It went way beyond workplace safety to all kinds of safeguards for workers in the labor force. And we have her to thank in part for Social Security, unemployment insurance, the 40-hour week, minimum wage, and laws against child labor. Of course, there's way more to be done, but she is really a heroine of workplace safety and workers' rights in America.
It's kind of funny because when FDR asked her to serve in his administration, I mean, she had conditions. I mean, this just shows you what kind of woman she was. She said, "I will accept only on the condition that he, FDR, back her goals. Unemployment insurance, health insurance," we're still working on that one, "old age insurance, the 40-hour work week, a minimum wage, and abolition of child labor," which is an issue we're talking about on the show. There's a number of states, 10 states right now, want to lower the age for child labor. Ohio is one of them. She later recalled, "I remember he looked so startled that he said, 'Well, do you think it can be done?' And she said, 'Well, I'm going to find out.'" That is one heck of a woman back then in FDR. So, I mean, it's amazing. So what are you doing this month? Now, you spoke last night where, and you're telling these stories. Can we address, because it's important that people understand how we got here, Ellen.
Right. Last night I was speaking at UMass Boston, which is really, you know, this is our origin story. This is where it all began, from our little tiny office at the YWCA. And then we expanded out from Boston, as I said, to Cleveland. Our national headquarters was in Cleveland for many years. Our union started in Cleveland. So I think what's been coming out to me is that, you know, we were inspired by history. And my hope is that when people read my book, Working 9 to 5, they will be inspired by the 9 to 5 history. And I am inspired by the kind of organizing that's going on today. And we're hearing new voices and seeing new tactics, like the barbecues at Amazon and the sip-ins at Starbucks. And all over the country, we're seeing people supporting unions in a way that they have not in two generations. Support for unions among all Americans is 71% today, and that's higher than it has been for two generations. So I really have hope that people are going to come up with the answers to some of today's problems. We still have some of the old ones, like the wage gap between men and women, which is much worse for women of color. Computerized monitoring is a new problem that we didn't have back then. The relentless pace of work, the gig economy. There's still many problems to be solved, but you know, what comes across to me is that we were 22 years old. We didn't know what we were doing, but nobody else did either. And we just figured we should just get on with it. And if one thing didn't work, we tried something else. And that's what workers, activists are going to do today. And they're going to inspire us all.
You know, it's funny you mention that because you're 22. You're figuring, what do we have to lose? I mean, the wages were crappy. The conditions were crappy. And it's very similar to your point of what's going on, like in the Amazons of the world. And I mean, their warehouses are atrocious. They have more workplace violations than any other warehouse, almost double in some instances. And these workers, they're not even affiliated with the AFL-CIO. They're independent unions. The sad part, though, they have not achieved a first contract. I know that's very, very difficult. In fact, we did a show on that. It's very, very hard. And often the companies like to delay to the point where the workers that originally organized are not there anymore. It's very sad.
Right.
But you, I mean, in your voice, you sound pretty optimistic that nonetheless, that moving forward, especially with a worker-friendly NLRB, the Biden administration, union favorability, it's all looking pretty good right now, isn't it?
Well, certainly unions still face enormous opposition from employers, as we did. And employers have way too much leeway to get their way and, you know, holding mandatory meetings where workers are instructed about why a union is not the right thing for them right at the workplace, while mm-hmm. union organizers are not allowed in there. But I think what we're going to see is a blend of the workplace by workplace, election by election organizing, plus the more creative, freewheeling community organizing style that 9to5 helped to pioneer and that we married to our workplace by workplace organizing. Because Amazon, they're working very hard to win those elections. But the really important thing in addition to that is that we all know about it. Same thing with Starbucks. Everyone knows about the Starbucks organizing. And if it weren't for that, it would be much harder for workers to make headway in these little tiny stores. But hundreds of Starbucks stores have been organized. They are negotiating contracts. And so I think people are going to figure it out. As I say, there are problems that we didn't have, remote work being one. How do you organize people who aren't even in a workplace? But once a movement gets going, and that's what we learned at 9to5, that things begin to change. And even people who have not been at our meetings, have not been on our picket lines, they're starting to think differently. And their employers are thinking differently. And government enforcers are thinking differently. And change happens in many different ways, in addition to just the union elections themselves, which are really important, but not the only thing.
Keep the movement going. That's basically what we're talking about here on the show. Ellen, a pleasure. Always a pleasure having you on the show. Ellen Cassidy, author of the book, Working 9to5. Do check out her website, ellencassidy.com. She's speaking all around the country on this and many other issues. You take care, and please stay in touch with us, okay?
Thanks so much, Ed.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we're going to check in with the Occupational Safety and Health Administration and the latest from the United Labor Agency. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.